Blog Talk Radio.
Siempre que te pregunto que cuándo, cómo y dónde, tú siempre me respondes, quizás, quizás, quizás. Y así pasan los días y yo desesperada.
Hello, hi Phil. I'm doing good. Doing good.
Very good. Very good. I'm glad to hear. And we also have Barb Puddles 33 with us tonight. And hello, Puddles, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jean. Good to be here.
Very cool. Yes. I think we'll have some fun.
Nice to have you, Barb.
Yes.
Be
thanks,
fun.
Naomi.
Well. Thank you so much for phoning in.
Yeah. So, tell me, Naomi, tell me about tonight's show.
Oh, my gracious, there isn't much to say at all. You know, there's this site I came over. I think it's mostly artificial intelligence. Whoops, don't judge me. There's great art on there.
No, I was listening.
Yeah, and it's called Lexica. And, you know, I just fell in love with this art. And I took out all the pieces that had, like, black. I don't know why. Black, white, and red. I don't know why. I said, okay, let's make a theme here. Let's reunite all these pieces that have black, that are black, white, and red. And I just called the show Black, White, and Red. And the music, Barb said it was sultry. Yeah, it is. You know, when you really listen to it, maybe I should have kept it for tomorrow night. But, you know, the quizás is, you know, maybe, or What is the other, who knows? So who knows what I thought of when I did this content.
I'm so glad that you said that, Naomi. Because when I was loading up the intro, I was going, why does that sound so familiar? But it was Doris Day did that piece in English.
Uh-huh.
And there was another group called Take. And they also did that song in English. And I'm going, why does that sound familiar? Why does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
And as soon as you said what it was, I'm like, well, no wonder it sounds familiar, Jean. You know, so I just had to stop. I was lost. I was like, why? Why do I ever know this? So see, it doesn't take much to confuse.
It was done in French, too. You know, and it was who knows. It was done in French, too. So I think it was done in almost every language, that song.
The English title is Perhaps.
Yeah, I saw that one, yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. What is it? Yeah, perhaps. So, yes. Okay. Anyway, thanks for the tidbit. I liked it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a song that I liked, and I said, well, why not? Why not have it? To have it for tonight. So I didn't really know when you texted me, where's your intro song, Naomi? I was there. Whoops.
But I get it.
I can't stand there sometimes because I'm Pam too. Because you know, I get in my head and I do have a ADD pretty bad. You like, which I gave to my four kids pretty bad, and I do get in my head and I get lost and I get thinking of all kinds of things and then I go, oh boy, and then, you know, did I do this? Did I do that? I have to have post-its all over the place, you know, to remind me of this that I, you know, like. Be really organized, and you know that's how I got through university. My gracious, it would take me like a week more than every other student to get through a class. But got through it.
Hey Naomi, don't underestimate the power of post-its. Our two kids when they were little really wanted a puppy. So they put post-it notes all over our house. Bark, bark. Do we have a dog yet? I want a dog. Drove us nuts. A week later, we had a dog.
That's funny.
That's so funny. You know, I want a dog so bad, but, you know, it's like I have so much stuff going on right now. It's like, you know, almost I have a cat, and you know, so maybe I'll have a dog one day, you know, maybe one day when things get quieter. But now my cat is she's outside right now, and as soon as the radio show will get on the road, she'll be meowing at the door in a cat fight or something, you know. she knows.
Yeah, she's got her timing down.
Oh, yeah. Hey, how many times have I said, whoops, I have to go for the cat?
A lot. She knows just when to get you. She has her undivided attention.
So I let her in right before the show. And, you know, when 5 minutes before the show, she was meowing at the door wanting to go out. I said, I was looking at her, you're sure now? You know, because it's snowing here. It's really freezing out. But she wanted out just to disturb me later. Watch it. So anyway, I'll start putting up links, and Jody was supposed to phone in and put up links for me, but I'll start putting up links. I think he's finishing off a write for tonight, and so. So he'll probably phone in later on when he gets that write-up in. And I have our first write-up by Guilty. And Barb, why don't you give it a read for us?
Okay, thanks, Naomi. Piecemeal. Stitch by stitch, the seams fray. Strands are pulled, and what remains floats away. A live stream filled with aquatic life. Schools of fish shot down, a bullet at a time. The black revolver spins, chambers are loaded. Loud firecrackers pop and bang. Smoking pistol makes it too hot to hang. You'll mourn the relatives you left. Toxic dumps abandon the scales. It was a murder with plenty of clues. Distance was your alibi. White trash and black. Garbage bags hide the dead bodies you'd never got to say goodbye. End poem.
Awesome read. My gracious, it was a wonderful read. And you know what a punch, you know, to the, you know, this piece is. It's visceral. It's so impactful. You know, I read it as, you know, very thought-provoking piece about, you know, guns and, you know, how they are, I don't know, you know, I wrote a piece way back against guns and I got all kinds of these comments because I know the United States and the guns, you know, some people are really, you know, for guns, but you know, here in Canada we don't have a gun in our house. You know, I don't know anybody that has a gun in their house unless it's for, you know, hunting, you know, you know, those long carabins or whatever, but you know, they're locked away, so, but you know, nobody has a gun like to protect themselves or, you know, or handguns or stuff like that. And I read this as a kind of a thought-provoking piece against, you know, violence, death, and, you know, and against guns. I don't know if I'm being wrong here, but that's what I kind of got out of it. What did you think, Phil?
Well, you know, I thought this was a great piece. And it, when I looked down at what Guilty had put in his author's notes, you know, small-time criminals, he mentions on those, but then violence, death, murder, sad in society. And that pretty much lines it all up there, I think. You know, it is a sad society we live in to a great extent. There's a lot of great people out there, and I don't ever want to say I'm like, I don't believe that. I do, but there's just people out there that just want what they want when they want it. And they're like kids. They're like little kids because if they don't get it, they go on a spree. They throw a tantrum. People get hurt, you know, because they're not little kids anymore. They're big kids, you know, acting at a lessened capacity, I will say. How's that for being straight up about it? And I think that this is sad because he points up so many things that are just painful images, you know, throughout. The black revolver spins, chambers are loaded, loud firecrackers pop and bang. Smoking pistol makes it too hot to hang. You'll mourn the relatives you left, toxic dumps, abandoned scales. It was a murder with plenty of clues. Distance was your alibi, white trash and black garbage bags. Hide the dead bodies you never got to say goodbye. You know, one person can devastate many. So, Guilty, I think you did a nice job with this piece, and well done. Well, good job all the way around. So thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment there. And, you know, those are the stanzas that, really stood out for me, too. And what did you think, Barb? You read it so wonderfully.
Yeah, well, first I'd like to comment of, you know, what you two were talking about, just the state of society here in the States. You know, I was born and raised in Canada, didn't come to the States till I was in my late 30s to get married to my man. And I'm like an outdoors person. I love to hike and jog trails on my own. And so I was doing that in Southern California, probably not the wisest thing. My first Christmas gift from my then boyfriend was pepper spray. Welcome to America. You need to take this when you're jogging, babe. I'm like, oh my gosh. It was like, yeah, it was horrible. Okay, fast forward 22 years, or I guess 22 years. I'm taking my daughter up to Canada to go to Simon Fraser University. We're driving up. We're crossing the border. They ask, do you have anything you'd like to declare? And I'm like, well, just this pepper spray. She's like, what? Well, yeah, I'm sending my daughter up to college. I want her to carry this pepper spray. And she just laughed. It's like, she will not need that here. So in the 22 years at that point that I'd lived in the States, I had become American of mind. So it's amazing how your innocence can kind of be corrupted depending on the culture and the community in which you live. And I thought Guilty did a great job of illuminating kind of the darker side that's probably present in all of us, but typically we're not tapping into it. And it just shows the slow disillusion of cultural norms and polite society as stitch by stitch the seams fray. Strands are pulled and what remains floats away. It's like my outer protection, my what's okay in society, who I should be, just floats away, you know, left with the dark core. And then this is the part that's really sad, you know, the alive stream filled with aquatic life, schools of fish. I can't help but think about all the school shootings.
Yep.
And, you know, some of those have been live streamed. It's the sickest part of society where these young people just feel they've got to put on live TV or live feeds these horrible acts that they're doing. And I thought Guilty did a really good job of bringing all of that to light. He doesn't glorify it. He doesn't sanction it. It's just, here it is. Here it is, and it's ugly. It was a very important piece, I thought, and he did a fabulous job bringing it back to our attention.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, he did, indeed, and a very thought-provoking piece, and we had a great discussion around it, and that shows all the importance of these pieces, you know, these pieces of poetry that make you think further sometimes are so important. So thank you so much, Guilty, for that. And the next piece I have up is by Robert J. Tice. And Phil, if you want to go ahead and give that one a read.
Okay. I don't have that one, Naomi. Let me go and fix that. Go ahead and do the next one, and I'll figure this one out. So, Sally.
Oh, Robert J. Tice. You know, okay, I'll do that. I'll read that one. Outside old lines of thought, you say this world's a coloring book with simple gaps we need to fill. You offer crayons, pencils, pens, and lecture me to shade the page. I've seen those lines you've drawn so long, the borders others think to ink, confining styles, ordained shapes of patterns, blueprints, silhouettes. Think margins holding back new forms,
designs of past minds, former times. But I was never one to hinder dreams, to force large thoughts behind small walls, or hold views to specific floors in someone's mental residence. My motives rove, run where they must, won't fall for false simplicity or cunning contours that curtail for diversity, complexity, or intricate reality. Blank pages offer what I need, most openness to illustrate this beautifully boundless life with phoenix quills dipped in the light of lethal limits set ablaze. End poem. And, you know, I really love the artistic creativity in this write. And, yeah, he pours his feelings onto the page. You know, feelings of his thoughts and open, you know, of being a writer, that's, you know, the freedom to write what you think and, you know, just pour your thoughts onto a page. Color, like they say, color outside the lines. And, yeah, and I really enjoyed this write. What did you think, Barb?
I thought it was beautiful. It was amazing. I loved this part particularly. But I was never one to hinder dreams or force large thoughts behind small walls. There's just so much information there. To me, it's about someone who's choosing to live life in full, vibrant color, outside the lines. As a matter of fact, there are no lines. It's a blank page to him. He's not going to have other people's lines that have been drawn back in history that worked for them, for their lives, for their times. He's got his own agenda. He's got his own path, and he's going to follow it, and he's not going to let other people's walls box him in. It's such a great message, so beautifully presented to us. I love when he talks about this beautifully boundless life. He wants to illustrate it with phoenix quills dipped in the light of lethal limits set ablaze. I mean, the imagery in that is absolutely gorgeous. I've always liked Robert's work, and I'm getting to like it more and more the more I get to read of him. But he sure didn't disappoint in this one. To me, it's one of my favorites that I've read of his. It's incredible.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, he really, he really poured himself into this write, and yeah, I really like it a lot. And like you said, Barb, one of his, his writes are always exceptional, but this one was really, really up there. And what did you think, Phil?
Well, I don't know. I'm afraid to answer any questions because I've been wrong. I don't know how many times already tonight. But I really thought you wanted me to play an audio for this. I'm like, I don't have an audio for him. I don't know what my brain was doing, but that's how it clicked. And I was in your reading, and I'm like, why is she reading it? I told her I was going to go over and put it up. I'm like, oh, God. So everybody, you know, bear with me. I'm not sure what planet I'm on. But this was a great piece by Robert, really. I loved how he began the piece. You say this world's a coloring book with simple gaps we need to fill. That was a great, great introduction. There's three lines. It kind of draws in the reader to go, and where are we going? And because it is like, you know, and like you said, Naomi, you got to learn to color outside the lines, because that's what makes it our own. But out of all of it, I have to go along with Barb, where she picked up, but I was never one to hinder dreams or force large thoughts behind small walls or hold views to special floors in someone's mental residence. I love that all the way to the end. I thought that this was just really well done. So many great lines, wonderful stanzas. This is a really great piece and very much enjoyed. So thank you so much, Robert, for sharing with us. Wonderful job. Next time I'll try and find that audio a little harder.
Well, now you can look for one because I have Barb's puddle 33 on the mountain.
The mountain. Okay. Oh my God! Sometimes I wonder about that. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
On the Mountain by Barb Christing. On the mountain I feed my soul. Inhale sweet freedom. Exhale foul shackles that chafe, pollute my view. Brother sun warms my spirit, invites me fly with hummingbird's grace, to hover and dart, suckle at the breast of mother's nature. On the mountain I taste the wind, savor scents teased from rainbow's brush, that grace the land with colors bright, dancing to a primal beat that moves my essence from pain's slow burn to joy's quick turn, twirling deep within my core to churn a smile from tears. On the mountain I look within to search my heart for thorns, allow the healing balm of space to whittle down their piercing blades, prune discord stems from mind's mystic maze, to nurture truths that bring me back to freedom's call. On the mountain I feel earth move, spinning round her axis a thousand revolutions but a breath. Her vortex holds me close, and in her tight embrace I feel her pulse, release my spirit to her winds, to float and soar and take my place in the wild expanse that hovers at Nirvana's gate, open wide to all who come to cleanse their souls here on the mountain.
Oh, wow. Wow, what a beautiful sound cloud that was, Barb. And, I was wondering, you were the only person who chose that picture, and I was wondering if somebody would pick it, you know. And it's so, you did it so much justice. Oh my gracious, just the peacefulness, the tranquility, the serenity that we feel when you become one with nature. And, you just become, like you say, on the mountain, I feel earth move, spinning round her axis, a thousand revolutions but a breath. Her vortex holds me close, and in her tight embrace, I feel her pulse. I've already tried to meditate, because when you have ADD, that's what they try and get you to do. Your mind is all over the place. It's a very, very difficult to do for me. I had a couple of coaches just give up on me, They say, oh, my gracious, you're a lost cause. But, I finally started meditating more when I got into my 50s. And so it took me half of a destiny to be able to get into that calm place and just to sit down and do nothing. Oh my gracious, I finally succeeded in doing that, so that's great. But this is really calming, and I really loved it. Every stanza, my gracious, it's just a piece of art. Really, really well done. So beautifully written, Barb. And what did you think, Phil?
Well, I agree with you 100%. I think that this was just a fabulous piece. And there was a wonderful sense of serenity in the words, wonderful imagery, and really, really well penned. The read was phenomenal. But I love to hear people read their own work, because the emphasis is always where it needs to be. I could read it and mess the whole thing up, but yet, with the best of intent. I love the image that you chose, because it does give that calming live right from the start. And you carried it wonderfully all the way through, Barb. I really loved it very much. So I'm not exactly sure what more to say. You know, as I say, the imagery and that calming, that serenity that you get from the piece really says it all. I mean, that's like, you know, that's when you put that check mark in the air. You know, you definitely hit the right notes on it. And I think everybody will also feel it when they read it. So magnificent piece, and thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, ladies. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
Wow, absolutely. And I see Robbie in the room. He says, you know, his approach to meditating, he says, you know, his best approach is to treat thoughts like leaves on a stream. You don't give too much energy to either ignoring them or focusing on them. You just note they're passing. And, yeah, that's a great, I'll try that, Robbie. Thank you. I'll think of leaves floating down the stream. Yeah, that might work. And, oh, my gracious, I was so into your poem, Barb, I didn't even think to go get the next one. Okay, the next one is going to be by Hat. And as soon as you see that appear, Phil, you can go and give it a read. Here it is.
I'm not going to go look for an audio. It's all good. I worry myself sometimes with these silly things. Okay, the name of this is And Words Echo with Silence Now by Hat. And she has the prompt up at the beginning. There is a silence grief bestows upon the soul. A silence only those grieving can know. A silence that shakes the heart with its violence. A silence that sounds like all the sorrows of the world. And this by Edward Lee. It had been raining for over 3 weeks. All the flower beds, even the mini ponds, were overflowing with wet grief. The lupines, burdened with sadness, bowed to the ground. The genista threw off her golden dress. The raindrops running down the ivy were knocking out a requiem. Tap, 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 tap. Huge teardrops like peas poured from the gutters. The fruit trees shed their leaves as a sign of mourning. The stones on their surface were weeping. Old garden wailed. A dog whined near the porch. And mother's heart whimpered on the loss of her child. End the poem. Oof.
Yeah, this really got me when I read it. And, you know, to know that it's personal, too, to Emily makes it all that more heart-wrenching. And, you know, it left me totally speechless. I didn't even know what to comment to her, you know. I still tear up when I hear it. And, yeah, you know, this won the gold. And... must be an awful thing. I can't even imagine losing a child. Oh, my gracious, you know. And Barb, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful imagery. Rain, I love rain, hence my moniker, Puddles. I love rain. I love being in the rain. I love smelling the rain. I love listening to the rain. And she brought all of those senses into her poem. And I love how she likened the rain to tears and how the tears just weighed down all the beauty of her garden, how it tore it up, how it mulched it, and turned it naked and hurting and wounded, and then told us that, you know, and mother's heart whimpered on a loss of her child. So you see the connection between all the grief that's happening in the garden and all the grief that is happening in this mother's heart. It was poetic. And I love that little point where she gives it a rhythm. Tap, 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 tap. There's just so much to enjoy here. It was an incredible piece. And I'm sad to learn that it's from her life story. I cannot imagine losing a child. The pain of that must be overwhelming. So her ability to write so eloquently of this pain and her generosity in sharing her journey, I'm sure she's touching other people who are going through the same thing or similar things. I really believe that poetry has an ability to heal, has ability to connect hearts and journeys, and I think she's done a fabulous job of opening a portal to someone to make that connection with them through her words and through her journey to touch their life and their journey. She did a fabulous job with this piece.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's what poetry, you know, poetry's there, you know, sometimes often to heal yourself and help heal others, eh? And that's what Emily's doing here with this poem. And, you know, kudos to her for that. And, you know, it must be awful hard to write about it. So, and she did it, like you said, so eloquently and so, you know, the garden being torn apart by the rain, those teardrops, you know, as an extended metaphor for the pain, the teardrops, her own grief, you know, her own tearing inside as the loss of the child is, you know, just amazing. Her writing is just amazing. And what did you think, Phil?
I have to agree with both of you ladies. It's a wonderful piece. You know, and in the beginning, you know, you're not quite in tune with it. You know, it had been raining for over 3 weeks, so all the flower beds, even the mini ponds, were overflowing with grief. And when you first read that, you figure it's the grief of just being overwhelmed or inundated with the rain. But then when you get down to the fruit trees, everything comes into focus. And I think it was just wonderfully put together. And I think that it wasn't as much as it, you know, it kind of hurts your heart when you read that last stanza. It's not an in-your-face piece. You know, she did it in such a wonderfully delicate fashion and came through the whole tale. And then, as I say, when you get into those last two stanzas, it turns around and you see it for what it is. And I think it was beautifully done, and I think it was pretty incredible. And I think the emotions were very well expressed in here by the flowers, and pretty amazing. So excellent job, Hats. And thank you for sharing with that. And I am sorry for your loss. I can say I know how it goes. Yeah, I only have feels. So well done.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment there, Phil. And I have the next poem up by Deer Catcher. And Barb, if you want to go ahead and give that a read for us.
Absolutely. Emerald Satine. If my words could warm you, I would seek your comfort, couched in cushions, place your tiny feet in my armpits next to my strong heart, till you tremble no more, the knit brow relaxes, rest from many journeys. Bare feet feel vigilant, but only open your eyes can see the hint, the glint of broken glass, needing trusted hands and loving other eyes to explore the margins of old wounds. Iron sharpens iron. I kiss your scars and ease on slippers of felt lined in fleece, covered in emerald sateen, iridescent green, upturned toes ending in the smallest of bells of my own design. So I hear you coming and am always smiling when you enter the room. Please wear them, indoors or out. Much of the path is in darkness, and the smile of the moon sometimes just isn't enough to avoid the rocks. Beauty builds on the collapsing compost, blooms pushing through the decay. The frosted filigree melts in the warming sun. The rainbow hangs in sea spray. Uncertainty is overrated. A shared burden is more than halved. Some things your heart has forgotten. Let me whisper them in your ear. End poem.
And, you know, this was all, he went to the page and he got a picture of what looked like a emerald. Well, it was emeralds, like satin there, swirls. And, you know, from that picture, he designed this. He crafted this whole piece. And, you know, dear Catcher, oh, my gracious, when you can get a poem from out of him, because I'm saying that because, you know, he doesn't write all that too often. He writes, you know, it's not a reproach. It's not a, you know, I'm not growling here. But, you know, when you can have it right from him, it's such a treat. Such a treat, because, you know, well, for me, you know, because his writing is just sublime, and, you know, I just love the way this is so delicate, and so, like, so loving, so caring, you know, those slippers, you know, the way the slippers represent all that, all the caring that he's giving to his, you know, to his loved one here, and you know, he says, you know, the place where he says, "I kiss your scars and ease on slippers of felt," and then he says, "Please wear them indoors or out, because much of the past is in darkness, and the smile of the moon sometimes just isn't enough to avoid the rocks." So, you know, in that way, he's telling her, "I'll be there for you. You know, I'll be there to you know, along the path with you. I'll be there to take care of you. And, you know, here the slippers." And just beautiful all the way through. What did you think, Phil?
I thought it was a wonderful piece. And give me 1 second. I want to make sure I write this one word, otherwise I'll forget. I thought it was beautiful from the very beginning. Excuse me. "If my words could warm you, I would seek your comfort. Couched in cushions, place your tiny feet in my armpits, next to my strong heart. Please tremble no more. The knit brow relaxes, rest from many journeys." I think that this is, you know, there's no reason to fear. I will keep you safe. Is exactly what I get from it. And I thought the slipper idea was really, I'll keep you safe on your journey, more or less, in my mind. You know, no matter where you walk, no matter where you go, I'm there. And that's just what I got, you know, so it's just one take on it. But I think it was just beautifully written. I love the details, you know, in the imagery and the thoughts. It was just really beautifully done. I was going to grab the two stanzas that you hit on, Naomi, so, I mean, you know, but I could grab any others, you know. It just was a great piece. And as you said, I like Deer Catcher's work. Whenever it pops up, it's always I don't know, it's like a cherished write, you know what I mean? It has a lot of, it's just got a lot of depth in it when he writes for us. And I enjoyed
it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to thank you, Deer Catcher, for sharing with us. And what a wonderful job. I really like where you took this piece.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And what did you think, Barb, of the piece you read?
I agree with both of you. It is subtle in its silky smoothness. I'm going to grab the lines you started with, Phil, that "if my words could warm you, I would seek your comfort." When I read that, I was thinking about he's inviting, to me, I the essence I got from this is a father and a child. And so it's like, "Hey, little one, if I see you need comfort, come." But he's also getting comfort from the child. "I would seek your comfort." Like, I'm also, in comforting you, I will receive comfort. I do think that there are many fathers out there that they draw importance and meaning in their life when they're able to protect and guide their offspring, their children, or their step-offspring. You know, the people whose little lives are under their purveyance. And I think this is such a sweet ode to that father-child relationship. I really like the part that you talked about, Naomi, with the slippers, and please wear them indoors or out. It's like I'm putting these slippers on you. It's kind of like your special mantle of protection that I'm gifting you with. Wear them through your life. I hope they serve you well. I've built them sturdy and strong so that you will not bruise your toes as you walk through life. I mean, but the words he used were just so exquisite. And I love this. Uncertainty is overrated. A shared burden is more than halved. Sometimes your heart has forgotten. Let me whisper them in your ear. It's like if you ever forget, you've got me. I'm here to tell you, you've got me. I will always be there for you. And I also love that whole part he talked about, the compost. Beauty builds on the collapsing compost. You know, our refuse is garbage, but such beauty can come up through that, blooms pushing through the decay. It's like no matter what life throws at you, no matter the thorns you got to walk through, there is going to be beauty if you trust in it. Your blooms will come, your growth will come. And if you ever forget who can be there with you on your journey, it's me. I'll be your fertilizer. I thought he did a fabulous job. There are so many places you could just sit and dig into it and just like soak in it. It's like there's this subtle light that I'm just really craving more of. I'm actually going to look him up and read some more of his work. It's just a fabulous piece.
Absolutely. I recommend it to you. Not only is it an excellent writer, absolutely. Wonderful. And that was a wonderful comment and a wonderful observation there. You know, I didn't even think of looking at that father-daughter, you know, connection there. But you brought it up, and what an excellent observation. It's really, really great. And I have our next piece up by Talia. And I have no idea whose turn it is to read. I'll just go ahead and read it, I guess. My help meet. I feel by Talia R7. I feel my heart ache, but I have forgotten what that me feeling means. Ever since that day you came into my life has new meaning. You brought with you a light, a special kind of light that has warmed my heart, body, and soul. Your smile has brought me joy, joy unspeakable. My heart keeps on singing all day and in the night season too. What you have done to me, I can't explain. I don't want to explain. It feels good, and to me, that's all that matters. Where there was pain and heartache, brought peace and calm. You are irresistible. You have taken away dread and filled me with love instead. I am so delighted for you. You have my body feeling so weak. I am under your wonderful spell. In your arms I can breathe. I feel complete. I am dancing to your song. It feels so good. I don't want the music to end. We are unique. This romance isn't by chance. You were specially made for me. God has sent you to be my help. Meet to erase my fears and help me stand on holy ground.
And what a wonderful piece. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, it was really beautiful. This is the deep love we all crave, we all hope for, we all wish for our children to experience. You know, I've been praying over my kids. I've been praying since they were born, and I've been praying for their life mates since my kids were born. I pray for the growth and maturity and the life experience of their future mates, that they will be good to and for each other. And Talia does a great job of opening up a heart that is just being cherished by another, and in turn is just coveting and cherishing the person of their heart's desire. And she used such beautiful language throughout. I love where she starts, where, you know, she had heartache, but ever since that day you came into my life has new meaning. You brought with you light, a special kind of light that has warmed my heart, body, and soul. It's a great descriptor of the ultimate love story. And Talia did a fabulous job of making us all feel warm and fuzzy. At least she did with me. Yeah, it's a pretty piece.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, she just, like you said it perfectly, Barb. She describes, you know, the perfect relationship that everybody wants. And, you know, when you finally feel at peace, when you meet that right person that enters in your life, it's like you've met your soulmate, you know, and you're there together. And what did you think, Phil?
Well, I thought it was a beautiful piece. It was nicely penned and a great take on that prompt. I went back and I looked up the prompt, so I knew what I was talking about. Well, I won't go that far. But I love where there was pain and heartache, you brought peace and calm. That stanza and the next one after it, where it says, God has sent you to be my helpmeet, to erase my fears and help me stand on holy ground. That you can't, I mean, how can you top that? Really. You were sent to me, you know, so I could feel that, so I could live that. And the acknowledgement in this is wonderful. So I think that Talia did a great job with this piece, and it was very well written all the way through. Great lines, great stanzas. And it was just a wonderful job. So thank you so much for sharing with us, Talia R7.
Absolutely. And that was the last of the carryovers. So we'll finally go into the black, white, and red contest. And we'll start it off by a piece by Paul Brout. And Phil, if you want to give that a read.
Sure. Employment Interview by Paul Brout. Weather's fine now, but will it last? Clown comes from a checkerboard past, or checkered, wait, let me start over because that was too soon. Weather's fine now, but will it last? Clown comes from a checkered past. Work's been slow in recent weeks, especially for goons and geeks. He heard about a job in the city, looking for someone proper, yet witty. Put some color where it lacks in life, bring some merry to the black and white. He took the path called Ralston Row, a bordered path where roses grow. He needs a job, he needs one soon. He hopes they like his red balloon. End poem.
I just love this little piece, you know. It's just so clever and the perfect rhyme, the perfect rhyme and so tightly woven, just perfection there, that rhyming. And, you know, I like that he used the color, you know, and the description of a job, looking for someone proper yet witty, put some color where it lacks in life, bring some merry to the black and white. So he's coming down with his red balloon, and you know, he's going to that interview, and you know, I just thought it was a delicious take on that prompt. What did you think, Barb?
I thought he was such a clever, creative use of the image, and he used all the pieces and components of that image seamlessly within his poem. Clown, if you look at the image, it's a guy with white powder and a red nose and, you know, big red lips. So there's the clown, comes from a checkered past. Well, there's the checkered path that he's on. And then he talks about, you know, the roses lining bordered path where roses grow. So he brings that in, ends it with he hopes they like his red balloon. But he wove this story using, you know, all the different bits of that image. I thought it was a very clever piece, and I loved the rhyme. It was like perfect rhyme. And Paul's rates are often a little bit in the comedy. I know all his contests tend to be limericks and comedy. So I read this with comedy in mind, and he didn't disappoint. And yet there was also this underlying sadness and realness about it. I think we all feel like we got the white powder on our faces and we just want to be liked, but we feel like clowns and it's our mask, our protection. But we bring our red balloon in peace, you know? It's like, please like what I have come to offer. So there was, it was fun and witty, but I think it also had some really serious, darker undertones. Not so much dark, but very serious. You know, issues we all deal with.
Oh, yeah, I got that too. Yeah, and I'm happy that I wasn't the only one, because after I read it, I went and I read the comments, and, you know, they were all like saying the funny side, and I said, and I was thinking to myself, well, how I get this kind of, you know, yeah, this undertone of something else, of something, you know, like you said, not exactly sadness, but a kind of, you know, sadness, like, please like me, you know, if I bring my red balloon, like you said, please like me, and I'm happy, I'm not the only one who noticed that. So great observation, great comment there, Barb. And what did you think, Phil?
Well, I thought that this was a really good take on the chosen prompt. He incorporated all the elements of the image into the piece. And, yeah, I'm with you, ladies. You know, work's been slow in recent weeks, especially for goons and geeks. You know, it looked like he was speaking of, not Paul Brott speaking of himself, but it was as if the clown was speaking of himself. You know, work's been slow in recent weeks, especially for goons and geeks. Like he kind of just, a little self-deprivation there for his own, for the character, not for Paul. You know, and I did think it was clever, but then in the end is really, you know, for sure, he needs a job. He needs one soon. He hopes they like his red balloon. You know, it's not about that red balloon. It's the fact that he needs a job and he needs one soon. And this is his skill set in my mind. And hopefully they'll like that, you know. They'll be okay with that. So I thought it was a clever piece, and I take on the prompt. Captured the features of the image nicely, and I thought it was creative and witty. Because, you know, you really have to think past the image itself to pull something else in. So nice share, Paul, and thanks for putting it up for tonight.
Yes. Absolutely. What a wonderful addition. And next we have another balloon, another red balloon. Life is a Red Balloon by Ali Gorey. And Barb, if you want to go ahead and give that a read for us. And Brian, there's a sound on the line, eh? Am I the only one who is hearing that, the interference?
No. One of us is in a windstorm, I think.
Yeah, right? I'm going to mute myself. So
okay.
Whenever you're ready, Barb.
Okay. First of all, I love the moniker, Allegory. It's so clever. So I have high expectations for this one. Life is a red balloon. She walks the city's empty, crowded pavements alone. crowded because that's how city pavements are. Empty because she doesn't identify with them. She does not recognize her place in them. After a day's work, she's going home to her cut-price haven and privacy, clutching the string of the red balloon floating above her head, a balloon no one can see. She is a graduate with a good job that will get better. For the moment, she is content. Her future is in the red balloon. A life outside the city, away from the dirt and noise. Yes, there will be a relationship, a permanent relationship, where trust is repaid with trust, where care is reciprocated with care and truth. At all times will be the cornerstone of living. It is all there in the red balloon, a home, possibly children, all in good time. One day in the not-so-distant future, the red balloon will not be there. End poem.
And, you know, pop, they say pop goes the weasel, but here it's like it's pop goes the red balloon, I think. You know, that red balloon will not be there all the time. And, you know, so that you know, there's going to be bumps and there's going to be trials and there's going to be, you know, hardship in that life, you know. And, you know, one day, you know, the innocence that I think the red balloon represents, the innocence of kind of like a childhood, or the innocence of a life that's, you know, all carefree and all beautiful and all, you know. And I know some people go through life maybe without having that bumpy ride. I don't know, but, you know, I know when a lot of us, you know, I have my son, for example. You know, he had all his life planned out, and, you know, he was going to finish school, then meet a girl, then buy a house, then finish his schooling, has all his education, get a great big job, meet a girl, then buy a house, then buy a dog. And, you know, everything was going smoothly till he had a, you know, a mental breakdown, you know. And, and, you know, and then he really broke down, oh my gracious, you know. And he's okay now, you know, he's back on track, he has a top job and everything. But, you know, when you're not prepared for that, when you think everything is written down and your plan is going so smoothly, when you do hit that bump, I think it's even more striking, you know. It's even more, I don't know, when you don't have those hardships in life, and when you do, all of a sudden it hits you. My gracious, you know. Well, he took it hard. But anyway, yeah, so I think this is the poem, and I really like it, because life is a red balloon, or, you know, a red balloon that can pop at any time, I think. I think that's what I got out of it. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I got out of it. What did you think, Phil? Hello, Phil, are you on mute?
My goodness, yes, I was. I thought I was going to be good on this one. God, I thought this was a great take on the prompt, and it was nicely penned. But to me, the red balloon represented her hopes and dreams, the things that she wanted to accomplish in her life. And as those dreams came to fruition, the balloon drifted away. Because life outside the city, away from the dirt and noise, yes, there will be relationship, a permanent relationship, where trust is repaid with trust, where care is reciprocated with care, and truth at all times will be the cornerstone of living. It is all there in the red balloon. A home, possibly children, all in good time. One day in the not-so-distant future, the red balloon will not be there, because it's no longer hanging over her head in my mind. So I thought it was a great write and very well done, and thanks for sharing allegory. Yeah, nice piece.
Well, there you go. That's great. What did you think, Bob?
Well, I actually, you've convinced me, Jean, because I was going with the balloon is life, because her title says life is a red balloon. But you're absolutely right. All the storyline that allegory gives us is how the balloon is actually her hopes and dreams. It's like the balloon is always just floating a little bit out of reach. It's like,
yeah,
someday this, someday that, someday I'll have this great job, someday I'll have the house, someday I'll have the kids. It seems like she can't keep up with her balloon. Like, her string is just a little bit too long. And then it was really a heartbreaking final line. One day in the not-so-distant future, the red balloon will not be there. It's like either it gets popped and she dies, it goes back to the red balloon actually being her life, or she just gives up on her dreams like so many people do. You have all these great plans, and when year after year after year you don't get any closer to them, they float just on the horizon. You can just see where fatigue sets in, discouragement sets in, and pop, all your dreams are gone, and you just, your colors all drain out along with them. So she did a great job of letting us interpret it, which I think is a sign of good poetry.
Absolutely.
But also giving enough information that we can bring our own story to this and feel satisfied once we get to the end. So kudos to allegory. Nice work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a sign of great poetry there. And I didn't go get the next poem. That's a sign of somebody that I don't know what.
You need to go catch up to your balloon. Your balloon is floating away.
Come here, balloon. Has helium in it.
Why don't you say, Naomi? I've been like screwing up all night. If you don't know where I took that balloon. I think somebody stole my balloon.
Oh, yeah. And we have a poem by Fran Marie on the board. And Phil, if you want to go ahead and give that one a read.
Sure. Serrated Shadow by Fran Marie. I stand in a serrated shadow, my pen, a knife ripped open, veins of blood in drenched dismay. Discarded and thrown aside, you have left me behind, holding long-stem promises, tearing at the seams. Seems you don't care anymore, spewing words, careless arrows aimed at my bleeding heart. Daggers digging deep into indignation, a dreary existence takes hold, where once was love profound. Now nothing more than damaged goods is where I stand in dark domain, just good enough for the lost and found, waiting for someone new to claim my corroded soul. End poem.
Yeah, Fran Marie, what a beautiful writer, too. And, you know, I was torn when I read this, you know, because I was there, I stand in a serrated shadow. My pen, a knife rips open. So, you know, and, you know, there's no words, you know, it's following in the AN. So is it a battle with her own self, you know, that she's lost her own love for herself, or has she been, like they say, dumped by somebody, you know, by a lover, and she's waiting for, you know, but, you know, I go back, I keep going between the two, and, you know, she says, my pen, a knife rips open, veins of blood, and drenched dismay. So is it her poetic, you know, muse that's left her? And, you know, she's waiting for her muse to come back so that she can start writing again. You know, there's so many different ways you can take this poem, I think. What did you think, Barb?
That is a brilliant insight, Naomi. I didn't see it until you pointed it out. My pen, a knife. Oh, my gosh, it's her words. She's using this poem to expose her pain. She's ripping open her heart. My pen, a knife, rips open veins of blood and drenched dismay. Oh, my gosh, thank you, Naomi. Yeah, so she's ripping open to expose and display her woundedness. I really loved this line. You have left me behind, holding long-stem promises. Not long-stem roses, long-stem promises. And then I love the next two lines where she says, tearing at the seams, S-E-A-M-S, seams, S-E-E-M-S. I love how she did that, tearing at the seams. Seems you don't care anymore. She had some really inventive turns and twists, uses of different words, great imagery. Now nothing more than damaged goods is where I stand in dark domain. Just good enough for the lost and found, waiting for someone new to claim my corroded soul. I personally think she has been dumped. And she's used her pen to open the wound so that she can share her sorrow. And she's so damaged, she thinks she's barely enticing enough to attract someone else who might show interest in her. Oh, man, what a creative use of words. I loved many, many points in this poem. Yeah, this was awesome. Quite enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Awesome poetry tonight so far,
yeah.
Eh? And, you know, what did you think?
I would agree. I think it's a wonderful piece. And, you know, how many times have we all heard the term, you know, let me just open up a vein and, you know, put it on paper kind of thing, you know, write it in blood. So I think that it was a good take on that because it wasn't worded exactly the same as, you know, you would hear it. And, yeah, I agree with you, Barb. I think that, you know, it was a loss of someone who, you know, loss of that love, you know, someone that she cared about deeply in the poem. I don't want to put this in France. You know, home court, but let me see. Yeah, spewing words, careless arrows aimed at my bleeding heart. You know, all these things keep coming at her. You know, and she can just write it down. Yeah, I just think that it was a clever piece, and yeah, there was a lot of great lines in here. Very well stated, and it was clever in some spaces, like the seams and the seams and. You know, there was good alliteration throughout because I caught it as I was trying to read it. I'm going, oh, no, don't trip up now. But, yeah, I thought it was really a great piece. Now, nothing more than damaged goods is where I stand in dark domain, just good enough for the lost and found, waiting for someone new to claim my corroded soul. So, you know, this is over, and I'm just going to wait and see who comes along, see if something can become of it. So I think it was nicely done, Fran Marie, and thanks for sharing with us. Well-written piece. And
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, that's my echo. Oh, boy. Don't echo my laugh, please. No. okay, and I have our next poem up, and it's by Lacco Travadi, and I'm going to get you to read it, Barb, please.
Okay. Pandemonium Paradoxical. Kissed with a beautiful face, she has never been second place. Dark and dazzling, passion is what emanates. She whispers destinies and breathes dreams, her luminous dark eyes shaded and shadowed at half-mast.
tendrils of torment taint the paint of art that is dry. She is so many things, an illustrious illusion of divine fusion, a tormented blossom behind glass, dangerous yet delicate, an intricate map of memories in the moment and of this time. The delicious beauty has no enemies. As words waltz and wander, the truth is blind, spontaneous, dull, caught in mid-existence. Surreal embraces silent satisfaction. The seductress smiles, lucid and lethal. Time cracks, but the consciousness of life never lacks. Pandemonium, paradoxical, mystical magic portrayed by portrait, where artistic paintbrush strokes of enchantment color it all. End poem.
What a wonderful read. And you took the prompt and just went with it, you know. Kiss with a beautiful face. She has never been second place, dark and dazzling. But there's like she says, pandemonium paradoxical. So, you know, something that is, I looked up those words before the show, my gracious, paradoxical, pandemonium, what did they mean now? I can't remember.
Pandemonium is like, it's crazy, it's chaotic. Pandemonium,
yeah,
is like,
it.
You know, where a crowd goes crazy.
Yes, and paradoxical is like these, like two things opposite, is that it?
Yeah, it's a paradox. It's like a surprise. There's a paradox to it. There's a little shift in what you might ordinarily think it is. It is not.
Okay, that's it. Because in the prompt, she really looks sad, she's crunched over, you know, she's a beautiful face, but she really looks sad. So I think, you know, the author might have taken that into account in the writing. This is a fabulous beauty here, because it's a bit, you know, the art is of a beautiful woman. And and it's just strokes of enchantment. The last line, where artistic paintbrush strokes of enchantment color it all. And so, you know, she just, the way the artist really achieved to paint in all the beauty, to capture it all in the art. And I'll let you guys expand on that thought. And Phil, what did you think?
I was
Phil,
listening. I'm here. I think that, as you said, you know, when you look at the image, the person in the painting looks very sad and a little bit beside herself, but yet this is the whole upside of that image, which I found to be interesting. You know, kissed with a beautiful face, she has never been second place. Dark and dazzling passion is what she emanates. She whispers destinies and breathes dreams, her luminous dark eyes shaded and shadowed at half-mast. A beautiful description of this image. And I thought that in itself was very well done. I looked lucid and lethal, time cracks, but the consciousness of life never lacks. Pandemonium, paradoxical, mystical magic portrayed by portrait, where artistic paintbrush strokes of enchantment color it all. Interesting take on the prompt. I thought it was just well penned, great take on the prompt, a nice use of alliteration, and an excellent piece shared. And nice job, and thank you for sharing with us, Lakota Brody.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Phil. And Barb, what did you think of the piece you just read?
Well, I'm coming at it from a different perspective because I don't have the image in front of me. So I can only base my interpretation on the words that are in front of me. So it's an interesting to look at the different things that you guys saw versus what I saw.
Right.
And I really enjoyed the start of her second stanza. She talks about tendrils of torment taint the paint of the art that is dry. And in the first paragraph, she's painting this picture of this gorgeous woman. She's never been second place. But there's tendrils of torment that are tainting that paint. So she's painted this beautiful picture, but it's cracked. There's the paint isn't dry. You can see through it. There's a realness and something that is not beautiful just below the surface. And then she goes on to describe some of what is underneath that not yet dry paint. She is so many things. An illustrious illusion of divine fusion. So all that paint, all that beauty is an illusion that is hiding the inner self of this woman, a tormented blossom behind glass, dangerous yet delicate. And I've heard that from so many pretty friends where they just get so, or well-endowed friends, if I'm frank as well, they just get so sick of only being judged and desired for their exterior. And there's a lot of pain that is assigned to that because the guys just never scratch past the surface. They don't care who they are. They only care what they look like. And so I think Lakhata Brody has done a great job of painting that picture of the facade hides, I think, a lot of pain and a lot of woundedness. And I think she did a great job of describing some of that woundedness.
There you go. There you go. Naomi, are you on mute?
Oh, yes, I am. My first stand of the night. Yeah, that's it, Marv. Boy. You guys have that saying. We have that saying in French, jamais deux sans trois, never two without three, or something like that. I don't know if you have that saying in English, but we have that in French. But anyway, so I put up your piece next, Puddles, Barb, and there's a SoundCloud for that one, The City Bleeds.
And here we go. Well, almost. There we go.
The City Bleeds by Barb Christing. The city throbs, a beat, a pulse, a flow that pushes life through concrete veins to feed the growing mass of brick and steel, a carnival wheel that spins a promise of prosperity. Come, join the chaos. Play your part in Dante's fiery flash, where flames of hope lick at hearts that bleed upon the street, too blind to see, too weak to flee the drunken, pulsing revelry. Callousness hardens each city block. A million souls that do not talk. They cry and scream, demand their dream be raised above all others. Community, a cozy thought dissolved in blood-starved minds that move the blade of selfish gain to slice a brother's path, stain streets of gold a ruby red till jewels lose their shine beneath the clutching hand that hollers, mine, mine, mine. No tourniquet can stop the rampant loss of dreams that spill upon the pavement. And so the city bleeds, a million walking corpses as the pulsing city bleeds.
Wow. Wonderful, wonderful, right?
And, you know, this is so funny because Pam has out this contest. I don't know if you saw it, Barb, on Vaseline. And there's a picture of a city. And I wrote a poem that you know, was, I don't think it's half as good as this one. But, but you know, I touch on the same themes of, you know, lost dreams of being in a city where, you know, nobody knows anybody else. You know, everybody keeps them themselves. Everybody is rushing towards, you know, fulfilling their own greed, their own, you know, what they want without taking into consideration anybody else. And we're losing our humanity. Oh my gracious, you know, it's so different. You know, not, I can't say everybody's like this, but I'm a country girl, you know. I'm from PEI, small little place, nothing happens, you know, nothing bad goes on. No kidnapping on Prince Edward Island, never been in the news. And, you know, and everybody, you know, I go up to the neighbor's door and, you know, I'll knock for, and I'll ask them for sugar or whatever, you know. I'm not shy, and that's what we do, you know. That's what my mom did. That's what my grandmother did. And, you know, and when I was in relationships, you know, I moved into Quebec and I was doing this like in the city, and people were saying, like, are you crazy? Like, what do you want? You know, there's such a different mentality of, you know, when you come from a small place and between the city and the country or a small village, you know, people are closed off. And, you know, that's what I got out of this poem. You know, everything is like when you say it, hollers, mine, 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 you know, they want everything. They're selfish, you know, the selfish gain. And I think this is a great social commentary that you made here, you know, and of course, you know, I did a juxtaposition on the traffic, you know, the roads, the bleeding red of the highways, like in the picture, like there are also hearts that are bleeding red, you know, from broken dreams in the city, closed off people, you know, lonely people, and, you know, also the accidents that are on the road, the casualties that are on those highways. So, you know, you can get a lot out of this, right? My gracious, it's so well written, and every stanza holds, you know, depth in it. What did you think, Phil? I'm going to let you talk a bit. Are you on mute, Phil?
Yes, I was. I think this was an incredible piece, Barb, right from the very beginning. Because when you first look at that image, you go, okay, but you've nailed it in the very first stanza. The city throbs, a beat, a pulse, a flow that pushes life through concrete veins to feed the growing mass of brick and steel, a carnival wheel that spins, a promise of prosperity. I mean, when you first read that stanza, and you still have your eye on that image, okay, because, you know, you're still scrolling down, well, it's pretty amazing that how you've captured that. And it looks so accurate. But it's a totally standalone piece. You don't need that image for the piece to survive on its own. And I love that. Each one of these stanzas was very well done. You know, where flames of hope lick at hearts that bleed upon the street. Again, you go back to that image in your mind, you know, only because you've seen it.
But it's still, again, it's a standalone. It's just wonderful, wonderfully well done. You know, every one of the stanzas. And wow, I don't know. I just found it amazing. No tourniquet can stop the rampant loss of dreams that spill upon the pavement. And so the city bleeds. A million walking corpses as the pulsing city bleeds. Yeah. I mean, this is, it's just, you know, I don't know if stunning is the right word, but it is very, it definitely captures the reader. And it's, I don't know, I think it's a prime piece of, I can't call it real estate, can I? But it's a great write all the way through, and I really enjoyed it. Just a great take on the prompt. Your imagery was great. Yeah, it was just really well done all the way through. So, you know, congrats on a great piece.
Absolutely.
Hey, I have a question for you, Naomi.
Yeah.
I did not know that you were born and raised in Prince Edward Island. Did you know Anne? And I know you know who I'm speaking of when I say Anne.
Anne of Green Gables.
Anne Bonnier. Oh my gosh! What?
Yeah.
Speaking of great writing, I think everyone needs, Canadian or not, everyone needs to read that series. Phenomenal.
How cool to have grown up there. Pardon me?
How cool to have grown up there? I mean, you probably saw tourists there all the time.
Yeah, and you know, my father was posted in Quebec because he was a preacher from PEI. He was the only one who could speak French, because there's a little place in PEI in the West End, Tignish, and there's French Acadians there, and that's why my father's French, like Buot, French name, and so I moved to Quebec, you know, when I was you know, fairly young. Well, later on we moved, and but we went back every holiday, every summer, every chance we could. We were back on Prince Edward Island, so that's why I say I grew up there. You know, my grandfathers were farmers, my uncles and everything were fishermen. And so I grew up on boats, making lobster cages, and you know, just on the farm, running after the chickens and the cow and the pig in the yard, and yeah, it was really carefree and laid back, and yeah, was quite awesome.
Well, I can totally see, because not only did you come, as you say, from a small town, but I find that the East Coast of Canada has an innocence that the rest of Canada lacks.
Mm-hmm.
So you take just the inherent innocence of those Eastern provinces, and then you add being in a small town, and then you throw that girl into the city. I could totally see how it must have seemed like you had gone to Mars. And not a very pleasant Mars at that. Definitely a culture shock.
Yeah, and French. And French and Catholic, too. Because, you know, my parents, you know. So when we came to Quebec first, we were greeted with rotten apples and tomatoes thrown at us.
Literally?
Yeah, really. Yeah, get out, you know.
Wow. My father is French Canadian Catholic. He's the oldest of 17 kids. One mom, one dad. I guess a Catholic woman's not allowed to say no. But you've got to say yes. He's the lord of the manor. But yeah. The French Canadian is definitely its own culture within a culture. Very cool. But I'm sorry, we've gone way off course now. But
Yeah, that's okay. And and would you like to say anything about your piece, Barb, while we're talking here?
You know, not really, because there's so much other great poetry that I think would be good for us to talk about. So let's see what Betty Page has to say.
Okay. And so Betty Page and Pretty in Red. And Phil, I think it's your turn to read.
Oh, boy, this is right up my alley. You knew
that.
Yeah. This is called Pretty in Red by Betty Page. Aren't I pretty in red, weeping silently, dripping crimson, bleeding out, slowly fade. End poem. Wow.
Yeah, and she packed a real punch into that, you know, into that little brevity, my gracious, you know. Bleeding out, slowly fade. Bleeding out there, becoming more and more crimson, bleeding out and slowly fading away. Wow, she really did. It's very poignant and very sad piece. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, I think of like that clown image we had, where, you know, the clown is supposed to have that facade of funny fun, but often clowns are the most depressed people. Comedians tend to be the most depressed people. And so that first line, I get that sense of tongue-in-cheek, you know, pretty in red. It's, I look better dead kind of thing. It's like, aren't I pretty? Because you all have found me so darn ugly. You have taken me. You've forced me into this place. So there's a really dark edge to this. And as you mentioned, Betty did a fabulous job in a handful of words, creating a very heavy space that she holds us in with just a handful of words. It's a really well-written piece. And I often have to remind myself as I'm, you know, churning out words by the dozen, by the pound, that less is more. So often less is more. And this poem is definitely more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a real, when I started doing brevity, it was a real, like a lesson, you know, because, it helps you write better poetry, I think, because you get in that, and you really have to cut it short, you know, to the main essence of your message, and it helps in any kind of writing. And so I think Betty has it down to a, right, you know, down to, what do you say that? How do you say that in English? Down to a, spot on there, you know. She really took that into account here. And what did you think, Phil?
Well, you know, I thought it was a painful piece and a good take on the prompts. Again, this is that same image that Lakota Brody wrote on. And I found it, the two of them are so completely different directions. But it was a good take on the prompt. There was a lot of imagery, it was sad imagery, but very well done. You know, for having so few words, she definitely has, pretty much nailed it. I mean, what more is there to say? I mean, I think she hit the essence of the image, in my opinion. You know, but great job, Betty, and thanks for sharing with us tonight. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, can I just add one thing, Naomi?
Sure.
Yeah, and it's more of a generic comment to piggyback off something you said, Naomi, which is writing brevities is a really good exercise. I go into a lot of brevity contests, and I'll write something I'm real proud of, but it'll be 35 words, and the limit is 30.
or it'll be 28 and you have to have it bang on 30. And so you go back and you rework it and you grind it and you kill your darlings, which means you then have to reinvent a new way to express what you want to say. And in the end, you think you've carved it up so it's not even recognizable, but you end up with this gem that sparkles. So just that act of trying to carve out the dead wood can leave you with something that's incredible. So I would encourage every poet to work on brevities. It's
absolutely
a really good exercise.
Absolutely.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. I see that, Phil. Thank you so much for the picture that that so many wrote to. Yes. And I don't know if Jenny wrote to that picture, but she's up next. Just a girl trying to be. And Barb, do you want to give that one a read?
Sure. I was going to put myself on mute for a while, but couldn't do it. I'm kidding, girls. I'm kidding.
Yeah, the windstorm is back, eh?
Okay, Just a Girl Trying to Be by Jenny the Deep. To a fault, I'm always loyal and dependable, all while being perceived as easily expendable, imperceivable in this corrupt, cold world until needed, chewed up, spit out, until in shambles, defeated. It's bad enough I struggle with codependency and lose sleep over impediment inconsistencies. Can the grass ever truly be greener on the other side? Decidedly, like a recluse spider, I stay locked inside. Someday, I may swiftly gather what lurks in the shadow, turning the nastiness of misconduct into shades mellower. A reversion of inversion that is indeed frighteningly due unto those holding flimsy power, peaceful chaos ensues. It's adequate enough to think in myriad of positive manner whenever prima materia waves a solitary heartfelt banner, yet one neither worn on loose sleeve nor scantily torn off, and an ethereal knife fit for cutting grievances stays held aloft. End poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read there, Barb. And I think Jenny just poured herself, her thoughts out onto the page, or, you know, at least, you know, put herself into the prompts, into the pictures of the prompts. To a fault, I'm always loyal and dependable. Imperceivable in this corrupt, cold world until needed, chewed up, spit out, until in shambles, defeated. When you are in, and I felt I can relate to this so, so much, because when I get into relationships, or just with friends, I tend to be a wraith in some way, you know. I tend to be the giver more than receiver, you know. I don't know if you know what I mean, you know. I tend to give and listen more than I say, or, you know. And then when I ask, they'll go, my gracious, what got into her, you know? What, you know? And I think that's what she's attacking here. I could be wrong. What did you think, Phil?
Well, I think that she used two prompts. She used the one I posted in the room and prompt three, which is the one of that was the two images side by side, one in red and one in black and white. And I think that she kind of gathered those, excuse me, and hit on the emotions of both pieces. Someday I may swiftly gather what lurks in shadow, turning the nastiest of misconduct into shades mellower. And to me, that was prompt three, speaking there.
And I think that prompt 10 kind of, it comes in that last stanza in my mind. But I think it was nicely written. Well, yeah, listen to me. Nicely written. And the imagery was good. I was going to say well described. I knew there was a word for it. And I think that it was a clever take on the two prompts. Sometimes it's a little hard to, like, separate out which came from where, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, this is definitely standalone. You don't need an image to understand what she's saying. But I always try and, like, tie it in. But nicely done, Jenny, and thanks for sharing with us another fine piece written. So, you know, congratulations on that. Nice work.
Absolutely. We always appreciate your writes, Jenny. Thank you so much for encouraging us every show, for sure. And Barb, what did you think of the piece you just read?
Yeah, I thought she did a fabulous job describing someone who just feels used, someone who gives all of themselves and then just gets drained of all the giving and doesn't get anything sent back, never gets to receive anything, never gets to fill the tank. And then finally the tank is emptied to the point where in the third stanza, someday am I swiftly gather what lurks in the shadow. It's like someday, people, I am going to tap into my darker side. Like you have stolen my light, so I'm going to go to the shadows. And turning the nastiest of miscontact into shades of mellower. It's like, I am going to give you what you've given me, which is a whole lot of ugly, a reversion of inversion. I love the way she paired that. It just rolls off the tongue, a reversion of inversion that is indeed frighteningly due. It's like, I owe you guys. You have screwed me for so long and use me and stat me out. Well, I'm coming and I'm sharpening my teeth, so you just watch out. There's just so much intensity. It's like, I want to stay good, but you won't let me because you just keep on abusing my kindness. And I thought she did a great job of just showing the woundedness of people who are just kind and giving. I would imagine Naomi, because to me that is you, I imagine you get yourself into places where people just take advantage. It's like, oh, well, Naomi will do it. I mean, she's so kind and she's sweet. And it's just got to be exhausting to always give. And so there's that point.
You just leave me out of it, Barb. You just leave me out of
What's
it.
What's that?
You just leave me out of it.
Well, I hear you're much more mellow, Jean, when you have a cup of coffee.
No, that's not true. That's a lie. I do want to say something, though, about this poem, because I just looked and realized this is a collaboration between Jenny and Justice Silver Bell. So I think both have done such a wonderful job with this. When you put two minds together in this piece, it's pretty amazing because it really is seamless. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that, just in case.
Oh, wow, yes, that's so important to mention. Great that you saw that, Phil, because, you know, would have completely, you know, passed on another person trying to be out on me. Yeah, so thanks so much for bringing that up. Wonderful collaboration. Yes, indeed. And I have our next write-up by Repeat It Knapp, and Broken and Bleeding.
I have that.
It has a SoundCloud. Yes, it does have a SoundCloud.
Let me hit this button. It's short but sweet. Yep.
Broken and Bleeding. I'm an empty shell waiting to decompose, hiding behind walls.
Wait a minute. Is that the right title? I'm sorry.
Yes. Because it's another voice.
Threw me for a second. I'm so sorry.
It's the voice of CJ Brompton.
I'm an empty shell waiting to decompose, hiding behind walls, lurking in the shadows. My primary colors, red, blue, and yellow. Fresh wounds, few days, and old yet to mellow. Getting overlooked, wishing someone would open their eyes and help me, if only a nook. I'm so tired of doing this day after day, constant pain every which way I lay. I'm drowning and my body needs air, chest ready to explode as I kick through the deep. There's never any sign of light. I might as well sink and become obsolete by repeated nap.
Wow, you can feel the emotion in the voice, eh? DJ Brompton, I don't know if that is another poet on the site or not, but it was him. It was recorded with it. He was the one that did the recording. And, yeah, you can just feel the I felt like complete exhaustion in, you know, this poem. You know, giving up, sinking away, fading away into nothing. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, he used really strong words that gave some really stark imagery. My primary colors, red, blue, and yellow, which of course are the colors of a bruise as it starts to fade. Fresh wounds, few days and old, yet to mellow. So this person's been beaten. So whether it's spousal abuse, which is probably likely, and just how damaging that can be, not just to your outsides, but to your insides. You know, she wants someone to open their eyes and help me, if only a nook. So I do think it's a story about a woman who's being beaten in her marriage, and she just wants someone to notice. She wants someone to see the bruising. She wants someone to see the broken bones. She wants someone to reach out and help her. I'm drowning, and my body needs air. I may as well sink and become obsolete. I think when you are experiencing abuse and you don't have the courage to ask for help, but you are hoping someone notices, but no one notices, then I think you feel so very, very alone. And you get to that point, sadly, of I may as well sink and become obsolete. So I think it's a really good reminder that we need to keep our radar up as we go about our daily lives, because there's a walking wounded all around us. And if you see a little kid who's got a bruise, you might want to ask an innocent question, or a woman. You might want to engage her in conversation and be that help, be that voice, be that heart that they've been craving and needing to hold on to so they don't drown, and get, hopefully be strong enough and informed enough to help get them the help that they need, the professional help that they need. So I think this is a really, not just a great piece of poetry, I think it's an important piece socially as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was wondering, because I went through this myself, and I was never able to make a SoundCloud out of, you know, or finish a piece about it, because I'd always, you know, cry so much. And, you know, I wonder if that's why she got it read in somebody else's voice, because she wasn't able to say it herself, you know, that, you know, that I, that thought just came to me. What did you think, Phil, of the piece? Are you on mute, Phil?
Yes, and I was halfway through my comment. I'm sorry. I'm like losing it.
It was brilliant.
It was. I'll never capture that moment again. They're my best comments are always made in on mute.
Yes, I know. I hate that.
Yeah, exactly. I think this was a great piece by Repeated Nap. And, yeah, you can see the abuse and the anguish in the piece itself. You know, fresh wounds, few days, and old yet to mellow. I mean, you know, and it goes on. And, you know, it was a great take on the prompt, because when you look at the image, there it is. I mean, it does. It actually suits it. Is it like spot on, detail for detail? No, but it definitely is implied in the image and well captured in the poem itself. So great job repeating that, and thanks for sharing with us. Great piece. Great piece.
Absolutely. And I have, I think I'll go, we'll finish with Amy's piece. And I'll give this a read. This is called Blending. The world around me fades to gray. No interest holds my thrall. I see its bones and now my place, yet my eyes glaze to it all. Instead, the colors bleed from me, my mind into the streets. Its prison bars crack open wide, my captors spring a leak. And so my shades blend into gray, overlaid as gaudy tiles. And I'll know that they paint my day, paint my face, my words, my smile, and home. Wow. What did you think of the piece, Barb?
Yeah, I thought that Amy did a great job of describing what it's like to live in monochrome, knowing color but losing it just because the joy of life is gone and the world around me fades to gray. No interest holds my thrall. I have a couple of friends who are clinically depressed, and that's how they describe it. It's like there's no highs, there's no lows. It's just in between. It's just nonstop sadness. You just don't want to get out of bed. You don't care if the sun's shining because you're not in it. You're just not in it. And so I really think what this is describing, as far as I can tell, is being in a deep depression. It's prison bars crack open wide, my captors spring a leak, and so my shades blend into gray, overlaid as gaudy tiles. Yeah, it's like when you're depressed, there's just no joy, there's no color, and I think that she did a fabulous job of capturing that. I'll leave something for you guys, but paint my face, my words, my smiles. It's like I don't get to be me anymore because me is gone. Me is gone in the depression. I don't exist. I just walk kind of in a vacuum. Yeah, it's a really good piece.
Yeah.
What did you? Yeah, that's an excellent, excellent comment there, Barb. And what did you think, Phil?
Well, you know, I think that she did a great job with the chosen prompt because I went over and I peeked. Excuse me, because that's what I do. As cars in the streets with the red splashes, there are like signs on the road up on the sides of buildings and things. That's what it struck me as. But I think it was very, very well put. And yeah, I agree with you, Barbara. It does come off as depression. I had a girlfriend who was clinically depressed, and she was on medicine. And when she would take her medicine, the colors would all come bright again. I found that to be kind of intriguing because I had no idea that that was part of it. But, you know, how can you get excited about something that's in gray and white? I get it. Kind of. I do. I don't know. Because if I said I did, I'd be lying. But just a wonderful piece. The world around me fades to gray. No interest holds my thrall. I see the bones and know my place, yet my eyes glaze to it all. Instead, the colors bleed from me, my mind into the streets. It's just like, you know, the way it goes. And, well done, Amy, and thanks for sharing with us tonight. Wonderful job.
Absolutely. You know, I see its bones and know my place, yet my eyes glaze to it all. You know, instead the colors bleed from me, my mind into the streets. Wow. You know, what an amazing writer Amy is, you know. And what a amazing piece. And I can relate to this because, like everybody knows, I'm bipolar. And so I go from one extreme to seeing too many colors, like just floating, to, you know, really down to just the gray and just wanting to lay in bed. And, you know, thankfully, since about 6 years now, they finally, after half my life, finally got me on meds that are working now. So I'm stable since 6 years, which, you know, is a good thing. But yeah, so I can relate to this, you know, a lot. And this is so wonderfully well put. You know, shades blend into gray, overlaid as gaudy goldy tiles, and I'll know that they paint my day, paint my face, my words, my smiles. Wow, wonderful. Just amazing, right? And this has been an amazing evening, girls. Oh, my gracious. I had so much fun hanging out with you guys.
Yeah,
I should say you gals. and we had so many amazing pieces. Thank you, Barb, for staying up with us. Oh, my gracious. We so appreciate it.
A coffee at 7 o'clock did the trick. Yay.
Oh, now the truth comes out about the coffee. Uh-huh. The truth comes out about the coffee.
I get it.
Whatever works, right? Whatever works.
Exactly. Of course, I'm up for 2 more hours, so that's not going to be fun. But
Well, next time you have to drink that coffee 2 hours earlier. That way you're ready. It's all about timing, girlfriend. It's all about timing. Anyway,
I'll work on it.
Yes, great show, Naomi. Great prompts. It was fun. Pam, we miss you. Hope everything's going well. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
I'll be good.
Absolutely.
Hey, and Jody never showed up because he is writing his masterpiece.
Well, we got
so you need to tell us all where he's posting that so we can read it.
He stood us all up.
I think he fell asleep. I think that's what happened because he worked so hard. I think he just fell asleep on me. That's what I think he did.
So great show and great company. Thank you, everybody.
Yes.
For Robbie for hanging out on the board. That was nice. I don't know where Quicken was. He's usually hanging around. I don't know. We lost him.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. He's probably hanging out with Jody. They're probably having a beer.
Collaborating.
Collaborating. There you go.
Collaborating.
There you go. Oh my gosh. Yeah, there's probably a lot of truth in that. See? Okay, I'll give everybody hell tomorrow.
All right. Good night, ladies.
Have a wonderful night. Take care.
Good night.
You too.
Good night.
Good night.